you read JavaScript programs, you will find two notations for defining arrays, the so-called old method and the so-called new method. But my recommendation is that if you're using Netscape 3, which I assume you are, you only use the new method. However, you'll find most JavaScript existing on the web will use the old method. And even this latest Netscape Press book on JavaScript tells you to use the old method, not the new method. And it is about the only book, books come out every week, but as of a month ago, it was the only book that even described the new method. The new method was introduced in Netscape 3. So the new method is extremely straightforward. It uses a reserved syntax called array with a capital A, and you write name of an array equals new array, open curly bracket, close curly bracket, and you can define the length of an array in the curly bracket. However, that length is optional because it's sort of just a hint. JavaScript as to how long the array is, because you can have arbitrary length arrays with the new method of defining arrays. So here's a typical example of how arrays are used. So if you look at Java, where would you use arrays? So if you think about it, there are lots of examples on web pages when you want to use arrays. So when you're making your fortune building your stockbroker page, you might want an array to hold all the stock, all the names of these stocks and all the prices of the stocks, and you would preload those into JavaScript arrays, and then you would do some arithmetic and manipulation with them to output them for your client. The example given on this foil here is where we have one array which runs over the states of the union, and another array that runs over the associated area codes. If there are two area codes per state, then the state appears more than once. So this allows you to build nifty pieces of JavaScript to prompt the user to associate the correct area code with some address. So if you have a form which has an address, by having these arrays preset, you can tell the user which area codes they're allowed to have for their particular address, so you can check that they put in a reasonable phone number and stuff like that. So, and also in that pizza example that Nancy did, you could have arrays holding the types of pizzas or the types of toppings. If you're selling shirts, you could define the types of shirts. So there are lots of uses of arrays. Some of them are dynamic, for instance, this particular program here, or some variant of it, has an array that holds all the URLs that I've used in class in a particular lecture. And it just adds to it every time we access a new URL. So it's dynamically incremented every time we click that button, it adds a new entry in that array. So that's an example where you want to use these dynamic arrays which automatically increase in size when necessary. So arrays have various properties and also various methods. The most important property is the length of the array, because that allows you to loop over it, and so that's area.length. Once you define your array, you can access the length of the array as area.length. If you have a sparse array and you've only defined, say, area of 0, 1, and 203, you can test for that by looping over 0 to 203 and testing on that parameter I call null. So if something is not defined, it's equal to null. You say if area of I not equal to null, then do something. That will allow, if you don't do that, you'll get error message from JavaScript, because you'll be accessing undefined variables, what JavaScript will call a property. variables are essentially properties. So when you get a message saying an undefined property, that means you are accessing something which had not previously been defined, and the way you avoid that is testing on whether it equals to null, because there are some cases where you have to access a variable which might be undefined. What do we have? So this example here just illustrates this for these menus. So if I have a whole bunch of menus, I can set up an array of menus. So I define list of menus to be an array of menus. Then I can write list of menus of 0 equals a new menu object. This shows how you can have arrays of objects. You see here, we have simple arrays of just numbers and strings. With this syntax here, I can have an array of objects, which themselves can be arrays. If you remember that menu object had inside it an array called options. So this gives you multi-dimensional arrays. So the way you define you'd access that option will be list of menus of some index dotted into options of some other index. So this allows you to define arbitrarily complex hierarchy where you can have an array at any point, as far as I know, in that hierarchy. It's certainly, I think I've tested it probably up to 3 or 4th order arrays, and it's worked just fine. And you can do what you'd expect, namely, you can set list of menus of 0 to be a new menu object. And if you also wish to call it world menu, set world menu equals list of menus of 0, and world menu and list of menus of 0 point to the same object. Yes. It's the argument of the array operator. However, for the new method of finding arrays, it's increased dynamically. So it's a hint. Now, it probably sets up some amount of storage, and if you go over it, you have to put a pointer, and so it has to do pointer chasing to run through the array, so it's less efficient. So if you know your array is 100 elements long, you should write new array of 100. It's just a help to the interpreter. So the hash, the Java had that, I believe, for the hash table. So it's not like Fortran, where you have to have fixed length, you have fixed length arrays. These arrays are that, Perl is the same as JavaScript. In Perl, arrays are basically taken care of by the interpreter. It will automatically allocate space. And in fact, it has to do that, you see, because we're allowing you to define sparse arrays where 0, 1, 2, and 203 are non-zero. So in order to, I don't know how JavaScript implements it, Perl implements that very efficiently, so it only uses 4 memory, like 4 cells to store an array with 4 non-zero elements, because it does it as some sort of linked list. Implementation dependence probably changes from versions of Netscape, one version of Netscape to another. If you say 100, it will allocate enough contiguous memory to store 100, which you can then just chase through trivially, and then it has a pointer at the end to the next chunk of memory it assigns. But probably Andreessen lets the programmers in the JavaScript group do whatever they feel is neat whenever they're writing this. Not defined. All that you know is the leaping principle is more efficient if you give it the right number. But it's meant to work whatever number you put in there, including leaving it out. Yes, it's dynamically changed. So this is a dynamic length. The same is true in Perl. The length of an array dynamically changed in Perl and in JavaScript. So that's not true in Java. Java, you have fixed length arrays, which is, of course, why they're very efficient. But this is particularly, see, if you're having an interpreter, you have all this huge overhead anyway. So if something's a pointer, given I've got a factor of 1,000 over the direct access time anyway, because I'm running an interpreter, if I change a value to a pointer, that's a negligible overhead. So if I'm running interpreters, I should always use such, such types of array, because there's no point. The reason in Java or Fortran or C, which are compiled languages, that you have fixed length arrays is that then you can generate in the machine code an extremely efficient access to the value of the array. You take the base address and you add the increment to it, and that is the location. So that's one machine instruction. In Perl, you do one machine, you set up some sort of hash table or something which gets you to the 203th element, or else you just search a list of set elements. You have some algorithm, and then you then find the location of the 203rd array element, and you go there. So that has some overhead, which is almost certainly for the optimal algorithm logarithmic in the size of the array. So maybe that overhead 20 instructions. But we already had an overhead of 1,000 instructions to interpret the text string which defined the array and do everything else we had to do. So that overhead of 20 instructions in an interpreted language is negligible. So interpreted languages should have these more flexible constructs. They might as well. So the concept, you know, this trade-off of performance versus flexibility is extremely different in a compiled language versus an interpreted language. Actually, I think that's a pretty interesting research issue. I don't believe people are brought up, like I was, with compiled languages rather than interpreted languages. The trade-offs are very different in interpreted languages and compiled languages.